Our next talk is on the effects of invasive earthworms on litter decomposition, available nutrients, and water dynamics.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. This is part of my dissertation research at the University of Vermont, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about a mesocosm study that I completed. First off, the contents of my presentation. I'll talk a bit about the background of earthworms and some preliminary data, which drove me to ask some of the questions that I was trying to address in the mesocosm study, and my hypotheses and overarching research goals, a little bit about the design, and then I'll talk about my results and conclusions. So first of all, earthworms. Generally, earthworms have been classified as having one of three, or somewhat a combination of the three life history strategies. So first of all, we have epigeic species, which live predominantly in leaf litter and consume leaf litter. We have anisic species, which create deep semi-permanent burrows, which they line with some of their mucus as well as some of the leaf litter that they consume. And lastly, we have endogeic species, which are geophagous predominantly and do not actually end up on the soil surface very often. And seeing as I did my study in Vermont, in New England, any sort of earthworm species that you will find tend to be invasive species because about 13,000 years ago, we had the receding of the Wisconsin Glacier, and earthworms were unable to escape when the glacier came down, and even when it went north, the distribution of, or sorry, the dispersal of earthworms northward has only been at a rate of 0.5 to about 15 meters per year, which means they haven't made it from the southernmost point of where the glacier ended up into Vermont. So from some preliminary data, we have a study in a sugar bush, which is predominantly a sugar maple stand in Vermont, and they are predominantly maple sugar production. And there we find areas where there are earthworms and areas where there aren't earthworms, predominantly Eporectodea as well as Lumbricus species, which are geophagous, or a mix of geophagous species, endogeic species, and anisic species predominantly. And in those areas, we saw elevated calcium and decreased potassium concentrations where earthworms were present, and the exact opposite pattern. So part of that, I wanted to look at whether or not earthworms are causing that, or if earthworms were just, attracted to areas of high calcium and low potassium. A second area where we have some research plots is at the Horticulture Research Center, which is a farm and forested area owned by University of Vermont, where we find a Mynthus species, which is a very invasive, predominantly epigeic species that originates in Asia. And in that area, we have a predominantly hemlock-maple-beech mix, and I did notice that there was a decreased deciduous to conifer litter ratio. So I wanted to look at that and see if there was some sort of preferred feeding. And lastly, at a Site 3, which is on private land that I can't really mention the name of it, but we find a very large density, a very high density of the Amynthus species, and they're actually at a density so high that the earthworm casting, so the excretory material from the earthworms, makes the top 3 centimeters of the profile and then is right above the B horizon. So they have they're going to have a major effect on the chemistry in the area. So this is the picture of the Amynthus species right here. I wish I had a video. I guess I probably should have done that, but they're a very active worm. If you pick them up, they will jump out of your hand. Make a great fishing bait, but you probably shouldn't use them. And this is also just a picture of the forest understory where there are Amynthus. And you can see there is leaf litter, but in the spring and in the late fall, there is absolutely no leaf litter. All you see is bare soil or castings. And what's also interesting is there's basically no herbaceous understory and very few seedlings, as compared to an area like this where there are a few earthworms and not very many, but you see a diversity of understory herbaceous plants as well as seedlings in some areas here. So my overarching research question is how ecosystems are affected by the presence of earthworms in terms of water dynamics, physical properties, and nutrient cycles. And my hypotheses are that earthworms would have no effect on evaporative water loss. I would see increased percolate volume due to increased macropores and bioturbation. And this is often seen, my hypothesis on this was drawn from observations and just other publications that see increased percolation because water will follow the earthworm burrow, especially in tile drain fields. It's really obvious. And I thought there would be a decrease in C-to-N ratio due to increased soil respiration and increase in plant nutrients in the leachate as well as the castings of earthworms as compared to aggregates and bulk soil and controls. So my design was a random block design. I had three treatments in a control where I added 2 Amynthus agrestis, 2 Lemurchus terrestris, and then a combination. I constructed all of the mesocosms from a loamy forest sand soil with synthesized horizons, and I watered them all based on a replacement of the controls on about a weekly basis, and all the leaf litter was homogenized across. In terms of water dynamics, I wanted to look at the volume of water lost from, in leachate and percolate, and I also analyzed the percolate for ions and as well as volume. And I also weighed the mesocosms periodically for water loss based on evaporation. And the soil samples, I did an ammonium chloride extract and ICP-AES quantification of the minerals. I did a CNN analysis as well as soil organic matter and leaf litter mass loss. This is just a design for if you want to visualize that, and the actual. So these are all the mesocosms, AB horizons, and then I have a heat sink just in case the temperature got too high, but I did monitor the temperature and it stayed at a very similar temperature to where the forest at the Hort farm. So here's some of my results. This is the average cumulative evaporative water loss from each mesocosm, which I found rather interesting in that there was actually increased evaporation from treatments with the Lumbricus terrestris earthworm, not from the Amynthus worm, which was rather curious since they are such an active worm, though I think that might have to do with density as compared to the control. And these are both significant at 0.05. And here's the average cumulative percolate volume from each mesocosm. And once again, the ones with Lumbricus terrestris are significantly different. If you're willing to take a P of 0.1, and the control and the Amynthus are not different. What is interesting is that the average leachate volume was actually less from the earthworm treatments. So that was quite a surprise. And then here I have some of the nutrient data. It's a pretty busy slide, so I'll just kind of highlight a couple things. First off, the leachate, I measured the total cumulative loss of calcium, potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, sodium, sulfur. And as you can see, these numbers are highly correlated with the leachate volume. I didn't actually see any differences in the concentrations. So the leachate lost was really based on the volume of percolate. So there's some statistical corrections that I still have to work out there. But what I do find interesting is when I did the ammonium chloride extracts, I did find that there was decreased calcium in the aggregates, so the earthworm castings, as compared to the control with the Lumbricus treatments, and also trending, but not significantly different. And then when I look at the bulk soil, there's actually increased calcium as an ammonium chloride extract. As well, in the bulk soil, I saw increased phosphorus. In a lot of cases, many of these are higher averages, but they aren't significantly different, and that might have been due to the fact that I used rather large mesocosms in a low density of worms. A couple other interesting things is the sodium. was higher in the aggregates, and the sulfur actually was lower. And considering redox chemistry, if earthworms do actually decrease the amount of sulfur, that could have some very interesting implications for the EC and everything of a system. And also I said I looked at the C to N ratios, and in the aggregates, we actually see a decreased C to N ratio, which is definitely going to have an effect on the microbial community, as well as possibly also train of thought. Anyway, so there is actually decreased C to N ratio with the Amynthis and the combined treatment, as well as if you're willing to take a 0.1 with Dunnett's as a fairly conservative statistical analysis as compared to the controls. No differences in pH, which I actually found rather interesting. And the litter remaining was the amount of leaf litter remaining on the surface. And I think this might have to do with behavioral differences, where Limbricus terrestris is an anisic earthworm and Amynthis agrestis is an epigeic earthworm. They quite possibly just dragged a lot of leaf litter into their burrows, and so the leaf litter in the entire system was not something I was able to quantify, and that might be the source of that. So I've done a principal component analysis just to show how that might have an effect on the system. So with earthworms having an effect decreasing the C to N ratio, we're actually going to see an increase in calcium, sodium, and sulfur in the bulk soil, as well as the increasing evaporative water loss. So there would be a decrease in sulfur in the system, like I said, would have some interesting effects on redox chemistry. So my conclusions are that evaporation rate was actually higher with LT and LTAA, but not the AA. And I'm actually conducting another mesocosm experiment right now to see if this was due to dilution effects. It's really, and also that there was also less percolate from LT and LTAA, but not the AA, which was rather curious. And this might have been due to the fact that I held the water at a fairly steady state. So it could depend on the system. C to N ratio lower in earthworm treatments, it seems like earthworms are actually causing that. And depending on the nutrients, some were less available, some were more available. And particularly with the calcium, there has been quite a few studies that suggest that earthworms produce calcium carbonate granules. Canty et al. In 2009 did some 13 carbon trace analysis to show that earthworms are actually producing calcium carbonate granules. So they might actually be decreasing the calcium availability to plants and systems. So that could be rather interesting there that I'd like to explore further. So just some final thoughts. Dependent on which species, whether it's an epigeic species or an anisic species or even an endogeic species, results can be additive, antagonistic, synergistic, but each species, or I guess at least any life history, can have a different effect on the nutrients in the system and cycling. Abiotic factors, like I said, I used a loamy sand, so this could have this probably had a very large effect on my percolate volume. And I'm actually looking at inorganic N in the leachate, and the dilution effects with large mesocosms might have had a significant effect on my results. But yeah, thank you.